Oh.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David McMurr, and I always introduce myself as an alcoholic before I say my name because I'm an alcoholic first and foremost before I'm anything else. That helps me keep in perspective what I am. Thank you all for asking me. It's an honor anytime I get to share anywhere. My sobriety date is March 31st, 1993. I had what I hope that's my permanent sobriety date. I know that I'm as susceptible to a drink as anybody else. The only thing is that I have some tools that I can choose to pick up and use, and you guys gave me those tools. I had what was, I hope, my last ride in the back of a police car in on Thanksgiving night, 1992. That night I had managed to go through like a tornado, a couple of different family gatherings, and actually three. Then they finally caught up with me. I had a cousin in Daytona Beach who tried to tell me that, I had a problem, and my problem wasn't necessarily a mental illness. It was alcoholism, which is a mental illness, but not what I thought my mental illness might be. He was very instrumental in getting me sober. Although at the time, I rejected his reaching out because I thought, you know what? This guy was adopted by my aunt and uncle, and now he's disowned by them because he's a drunk and a drug addict. I'm not that bad. But he was very instrumental. He Al got just shows the power of the program. He got in touch with somebody that he knew up here. And that person got in touch with two other people. And those two people came to see me and brought me the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The best I could do at that time was to say I might have a problem. Now, mind you, they came to visit me in a psychiatric hospital. I'm not allowed to wear shoestrings, have a belt. I have to light my cigarette in this little thing in the wall Because they don't let you have lighters or matches. And the best I can do is say, I might have a problem. And I thank God for those two people. I thank God for all those people who were involved in that. And when I got out of there, I started going to meetings, but I wasn't ready. Really wasn't ready. And after a lot of couch surfing and what have you, I wound up living with my grandmother who had dementia. And that's where I had my last. That's where I got my, what I hope is my permanent sobriety date. Things had gone badly for me that day, so I did what came natural for me because I had no tools. I had no spiritual life. And I drank and I robbed her medicine cabinet. And I passed out on the bed where the exact same bed in the exact same room that my grandfather had died in. And as I'm laying there, I come to, and the best way I can describe them is there were these little garden gnomes coming out of the wall to get me, to take me with them. And I prayed my very first honest prayer in 33 years. And I said, God, I don't want to die here. At the time, I didn't know that God had answered my prayer, other than the fact that he I didn't die that night. But God sent me back to AA, I had a great sponsor at the time who told me that when I walked in there, I had to pick up a 24-hour chip. And I kind of hem and hawed a little bit, tried to make some excuses, what have you. And he made it clear that I could do that, but he wouldn't sponsor me if I did. And I was given that gift of desperation that I was willing to listen as only the dying can be. I immediately went into the steps and went and did them to the best of my ability at that time. That's how I got here, That sponsor moved away. And I remember I felt lost when Marshall moved away. What am I gonna do? Here's my safety blanket. And I got another sponsor and we started going through the steps again. And he pointed out, in how it works that in the first paragraph, honesty, some form of honesty is mentioned three times. And he said, you can't do this. You can't do the first step until you get honest with yourself. He said, that's what it says right here. He was a really big book guy. He used to tell me things like, don't worry about the white stuff, read to pay attention to the black stuff. Yeah. God, he was a hard ass. And I did a four step with him. I eventually did a fifth step with him. And we got to six and seven. And that was tough. That was tough, I'd always had problems with God. And sometime in around six and seven, I realized that what was being asked of me of AA in the third step was not, my problem was not the word God. It was the word care. A hard time believing for a long time that there was something, someone, whatever that would care about David. It got easier after I realized that, didn't think I was going to be in a hole in the donut if I gave up all my character defects. He also pointed out to me that all I had to do is be willing to let them go. It wasn't up to me when they went. I did have a character defect I wasn't wanting to let go of until it caused me enough pain. I finally let it go. I was, I'll never forget it. I was in a lot of pain over a relationship that I was in. And, Ray said, well, maybe you ought to give up adultery, And my first reaction once again was, well, I'm not committing adultery. I'm not married. And he said, yeah, but your girlfriend is. When I let that go and got out of that relationship, there was, I felt so much better because I wasn't participating in actions that I found offensive. This program isn't easy, but it's simple. I made a list of all the people I had harmed. That came from 4 and 5, both. My resentments, plus all the other things that I had done. Because I didn't have resentments towards the people I hurt necessarily, not from the people I stole from, things like that. You also point out the kinds of harm we do. Unbelievable, the kind of harm that I've done. I always thought that, excuse me, I always thought that that was a physical act. You hit somebody, you steal something. I caused people a lot of sleepless nights wondering where I was and what I was doing and if they would ever get the call. So the list was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be, and there were a lot less resentments on it. I do not, the best advice he ever gave me was when it came time to do my 9th step amends to my ex-wife and my parents. And he gave me a script. And he said, when you go to pick up your children for visitation, you ask them to go out and wait in the car. And this is what you tell her. And I just said, you know what? Okay, I'll do it. And I did. I told her that, I know I wound up not being the husband or the father that you wanted me to be, or that I wanted to be. And I will do anything in my power to become a good father and a good co-parent to our children. Let me know what I can do. And it was really that simple. Because like he said, you don't have to rehash anything because she already knows it. She lived with you. She lived through most of it. She knows it. There's no need to rehash it. I did the same thing with my parents. I know I put you through hell. You never gave up on me, and I thank you for that. And now I'm going to be the best son that I can be. Let me know how I can do that. Period. It's really that simple, as far as, making amends for some of the things that I stole, physical things, like when I shoplifted out of stores. You said you get change at 7-Eleven, you drop it in the change thing for charity. That's what you do to make amends for this. And there's no time limit. You just keep doing it. Last three steps have been I've heard different things that they're the maintenance steps, they're the steps you have to do every day. Over the years, I've kind of changed my attitude towards the last three steps. I think that I have to live all 12 steps every day. I have to practice these principles in all my affairs every day. My sobriety is contingent upon my willingness to reach out to others. And that's part of my spiritual condition. Ray taught me a very good lesson in the 10th step. I was willing to, I had participated in some activities that was reprehensible to me. I couldn't sleep. So I called him and he said, well, I said, do you think I have to make amends, direct amends to this for this? And he said, no. He said, you've admitted it to someone and become willing to make amends. He said, your amends to that person is just not to participate in that behavior anymore. And I took that to heart, And I'll just say one last thing about Ray and getting here. Ray taught me that none of us are immune to drinking. The man who took me all the way through the steps and gave me a foundation to live by died drunk. He taught me that through that we all have clay feet. And that was a big blow, and I learned from his sponsor's wife that you can't help anybody who doesn't want help. Penny told me lots of times, I know it hurts you to see him like this, but don't chase him. You told him where the answer is, he can come, he can go. And he chose to go. Now I just talk about what I've been given. So I've been given through putting these steps into my life and living this way of life. I have been given a life that I never knew I wanted. I've been given gifts that I could have never dreamed of, you know? I've been given a conscious contact with a God. I've come to know a God that is not a punishing God, but a loving God. A God that doesn't do things to me, but does things for me. I've been given a relationship with my children. I've also found out that God has a sense of humor. Or at least the God that I have does, because I have a son and a daughter who are, oh boy, they'd hate me now. 40, my oldest daughter's 41, and my son is 44. Now, God's sense of humor comes in because I have a daughter who's 20. I actually have a grandson older than my youngest child. And not that all children are not blessings from God, but her being here was it showed me that God works in lots of ways, because her mother and I should not have been able to reproduce. Let's just leave it at that. And all of a sudden, Savannah's on the way, you know. So I figured that was God's little joke on me. And I love it. Know, another one of the greatest gifts I think I've gotten is the fact that I know now that my ex-wife, the mother of my two oldest children, not only had to leave me to save her life, but in doing so, saved mine. And if people would have told me that years ago, I'd have blown them off. I'd have been really mad. But I can tell you that she saved my life today. I was given a tremendous opportunity. My father and I had a very tumultuous relationship. And Even in sobriety. And that just 29 years into sobriety, my father was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Everything Anything and everything that was an obstacle just melted away. I had made an amends years and years ago. But it wasn't until the last year of his life that I got a glimpse of some more of that 8-step harms done stuff, we were so estranged that he actually had, him and my mom had to be invited to my 18th birthday. I denied them the right or the privilege of giving their son an 18th birthday party. I'd forgotten all about that. Now, ironically, the party was held in a bar. We just happened to be there getting lunch the day he told me. I could see the hurt in his face when he talked about it. That was painful to know that I was capable of that kind of thing when I was drinking. Actually, just in my alcoholism, I know without drinking, that I was capable of that kind of pain, inflicting that kind of pain on another human. He saved my life along with my ex-wife. Once again, I never knew the kind of pain that I inflicted because he was the one on that Thanksgiving night as I was tearing through people's lives like the tornado. He was the one that went to the magistrate and swore out a warrant to have me taken into custody. Thank God I don't have to inflict that kind of pain anymore on anybody. And I was able for the first few months after his diagnosis, I packed up my house and I went and lived with him. And then he moved into assisted living with my mom. And then in the hospice. I became his advocate. What a gift. What a gift. What a gift. And there were days that I bitched and moaned about having to do these things to my sponsor. And how nobody else was helping out. And my sponsor is the one that pointed out that that was a gift. That I wouldn't have to join the Wish I Had Club. I wouldn't be the one saying, I wish I had done this. I wish I had done more. I would, I was given the task by him to plan his funeral mass and everything else. Some people may not look at that as a gift, but to go from what I was, a person full of hatred, resentment, indifference. To being given that gift, and that's all because I came in here and I didn't just not drink. I came in here and got into recovery. And today, my mom is in a memory care unit. And I am the person to take care of her. I'm the one who gets to do these things. Whether it's buying, $160 depends and having them shipped to me so that I take them over to her, to taking her to the dentist, I sit with her sometimes and she talks about not being able to see anymore and how frightening that is. I can't imagine, but I'm there to listen. I'm there to listen when she talks about the phantoms that come into her room and steal things, I just listen. I don't try to correct, I just listen, and that's a gift, I really like to talk about gifts of the program. I know I probably spent a lot of time introducing myself, but and telling you how I got here, but and let's face it, we all know how to ruin our lives. It's how we put it back together that counts. And I will forever be grateful to AA and the men and women who have helped me along the way show me how to live a sober life. I have seen a lot of people come in here and get material gifts, get good jobs, get, folding money in their pocket. Everything they ever dreamed of. And I've watched them get drunk. Because they let the life that AA gave them get in the way of their AA life. And I try not to do that. I probably go to more meetings today than I went to in the beginning. Because I'm fortunate to be able to do that. I'm going to end with just a little story about God's grace in my life in sobriety. On November the 2nd of this year, I had a medical emergency while driving a vehicle. And I lost consciousness. And actually wound up driving through a bank. It was early Sunday morning, and there was nobody on the road. Nobody in the parking lot, nobody in the bank. And just goes to show you that good sponsorship and good AA people in my life, good men in my life, pointed out my self-pity and my selfishness, because I was wondering, why did this happen to me? Somebody else had to point out that, my sponsor in particular pointed out, you know what? God was looking out for you because you didn't hit anybody. Nobody else but you, the bank, and the car were hurt. You don't know how fortunate you are. And that's true. I didn't know how blessed I was. I didn't know how blessed I was when I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And even today, I can forget just how blessed I am. I could go anywhere in the world and go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm in a room full of people who know me. They may never have seen me before, but you know me. You know what I'm going through, what I've been through. We have that shared, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization that gave us the gift of desperation. And those of us who stay in AA seize that gift of desperation and don't want to live like that anymore. I don't know if anybody got anything out of that. If not, I suggest going to another meeting if you didn't get what you needed to hear. So, thank you very much for having me. Thank you, Dan, for suggesting me. And thank you, Jim, for setting it all up. God bless you. Thank you.